On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I give our thoughts on the recent podcast appearances by Kevin Durant and Caris LeVert, plus what to make of the Rockets letting go of Mike D'Antoni and some conference finals predictions. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, Marcus, want to get into our favorite thing, people on other podcasts, comments about that?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, no, let's get started with Caris LeVert going on R2C2. Really good guest. I guess they'd done a podcast with him before, but that was really the first long-form interview I've ever heard of Caris, and I didn't realize that he got food poisoning from Chipotle, I guess a year or so ago, maybe 18 months ago. And he loved Chipotle before that. And now he's sworn off because the food poisoning was so bad.
Well, that's heartbreaking. I mean, yeah, didn't Chipotle have like an E. coli thing? I wonder if it was related to that. I feel like...
It seemed like it was after that.
Yeah, that feels like it was maybe a while ago. But yeah, I would be crestfallen, Josh, if I got food poisoning from my like favorite place. I would probably honestly just like mentally chalk it up to something else that I ate and try to like live in denial that it happened and just keep going. But if it happened again, I don't know what I'd do. I'd have to stop.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because like I really like Chipotle. I think like the convenience factor is pretty good. It's reliable. And I'm trying to think, like, I've probably been having it, let's say, once a month for the last 8 years, which I think is reasonable. I've probably had it a little bit more than that.
Yeah, it's like 100 times total.
Yeah, it's 100 times total. It seems light, actually. It seems light. Maybe twice a month and for a little bit longer. But it's like, I can't just cut that out of my life because I get food poisoning once. I don't know.
Maybe right, yeah. It's bad. You should get food poisoning, I feel like, if you've gone 100 times. That's only 1% of the time. That'd be crazy if you didn't, I feel like.
Exactly. Yeah. It's if they didn't, it's like something maybe even stranger.
Yeah, maybe it's like a longer-term thing that they're using to like hide the food poisoning at that point. So yeah. Maybe I'm glad Caris got food poisoning the one time so he can have the once. You know, that was the fluke. That was the exception. Maybe he can go back at some point.
Yeah. He was also talking a lot about like his – pre-game food thing. He's like, he's a big plate of pasta and vegetables at 4:30 before a game.
I guess you like carbo load, right? Before a big like cardio thing.
Yeah, I guess.
Although I think you're supposed to do that the night before, I think.
It seems a little, I think Sabathia and myself are on the same page because he was like, it seems like it's cutting it a little close.
Yeah. I don't know. Caris, I'm trying to think because I feel like he does turn it on sort of like later in the game, like in that Celtics game before the shutdown, he was like not really doing much and then turned it on in the fourth quarter and overtime and like kind of turned it on late. I wonder if like the first half, first three quarters even, he's kind of just working off the pasta.
That's definitely possible. That's definitely possible. He's just burning that energy so that he can be kind of in peak form in the third or fourth quarter, which, you know, I guess is when they need him.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and he has pineapple at halftime. A very, very interesting combo here with LeVert.
He's got a fantastic diet, it sounds like. He's covering the bases.
Yeah. The pasta sounds good to me. I feel like I'd want to eat pasta more, but I can't because I'm not playing an NBA basketball game like once every 2 days to burn it off so much.
Yeah, the pineapple at halftime, maybe a little sweet for me. I would probably go banana, but I mean, I'm sure the pineapple like gives him a little bit of a sugar rush. Maybe that he comes out of the half, you know, sparked up, locked in, ready to play some defense. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what I eat for like a big work day or like a big podcast. I feel like I'm just fueling up on beverages. I'm just like guzzling coffee and seltzer at like a pretty alarming pace, if you know me.
Yeah, I like to eat after just because I always feel like I'm better on an empty stomach. If I'm like too full, I get slowed down, bogged down kind of. So I do a lot of water before, but then eat after.
You get a bogged down Bogdanovich.
Yeah.
Okay, so we need it. Let's focus on some actual takeaways that we can that we can glean from this interview? Anything that really kind of struck a chord to you?
Just like in this and in Kevin Durant's interview on JJ Redick's podcast, they kind of talked about their relationship with each other. And that's more and more, like, as the days pass, I'm sort of leaning towards thinking that they're not going to trade Caris. I think that the main guys like KD and Kyrie kind of view him as one of their core pieces. I think Steve Nash does too. And yeah, hearing Caris talk about like his relationship with Steve Nash and with KD, like how he was working out with those guys a few years ago. And I think I remember correctly that Sean Marks called him and told him before Nash was hired that it was going to happen, like before everything kind of broke. I think him being clued in on that, him talking about his relationship with KD and vice versa, I think all those are kind of signs to me that he's not going to get moved. So that's kind of the biggest takeaway that I had from all this, was that it seems like he's sort of entrenched as one of the key pieces on the team.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I get the sense that he's kind of part of the squad, both from you know, how kind of how intertwined he is with the players, and also how like the media talks about him. I mean, he had some really nice moments in the bubble, but I think like the way that a lot of people are treating him, like a clear number three over Spencer Dinwiddie, to me seems unwarranted. And I, you know, this is obviously a very pro Dinwiddie podcast. I both love him. But am I the only one that's like, come on, man. Like, Spencer needs to get some credit also. Like, I would probably take him over LeVert if I had to, I think.
Yeah, and like, I mean, we kind of talked about it during the bubble. Like, Joe Harris was more consistent. Not that he doesn't have the same highs that Caris right. can have, but I think he definitely is, like, at least in the conversation. Like, on a given night, he could be the third best guy.
Yeah, it's like, I think some guys just get, like, a really good reputation right away. Mm-hmm. People look at any sign of like positive development as, you know, kind of, you know, them making a good call with initially backing that player.
Right.
And LeVert's development has certainly worked out, I think, reasonably well, but has it been an absolute home run? I don't think you can say that just kind of by where he is as a player right now and also all of his injuries. And you have a guy like Dinwiddie who kind of is a bit of a loudmouth, obviously has all these kind of other ventures, second round pick, you know, bouncing around the G League. And I always feel like there's sometimes, unless that guy becomes a bona fide superstar, there's almost a ceiling they can get to, like where it's like, oh, it's a nice story, but they can't ever be the golden child almost.
Yeah, I think this is not exactly the same, but we've seen kind of a version of it in Indiana, I think, with Oladipo and Brogdon, where like, Oladipo kind of like as the Caris guy was like the bigger name, the bigger star. And Brogdon, when he came in, it was like hyped and heralded because he had like accomplished things in Milwaukee already. But similar to Dinwiddie, was like a second round guy, like a guy who kind of had to prove it and earn what he's gotten in the league. And like, I think eventually the tide has now shifted. And like, I think people think Brogdon is better than Oladipo, but I think for a long time, like, that was probably true, but it wasn't necessarily acknowledged. And I think, yeah, certain players, for whatever reason, kind of like skate by a little bit on reputation. Caris, I think, still has a lot of potential, obviously, and is still like a very good player. But I do feel like the talk about him as a third star is probably a little much. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and super easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, those prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Yeah, I think especially when it comes to fit, he has a long way to go to be a third star. That's always very tricky, but like putting up big numbers in the bubble when you're like basically the only guy on the team that can create a shot is a lot different than succeeding in kind of the role that he's going to need to have. So I think jury's still out there. I think the fit is going to be a little bit clunky when it comes to him and Dinwiddie and some of these other guys. And, you know, you still need to figure out fours that can shoot and defend reliably besides KD. So there's going to be, I think, some growing pains for this Nets team. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we look at where we are and, you know, with maybe 2 months of the season under our belt. So assuming March and, you know, there's definitely talk about, you know, things need to be reconfigured on kind of the, you know, mid-tier top guy front, because it's just not working out as currently constituted. I obviously hope it does, but I'm just, I guess, playing the pessimist as I'm wont to do.
No, yeah, I get what you're saying, though. I mean, I'm especially skeptical, like, that it's going to click right away, given just sort of the environment we're in right now, like the lack of sort of like on-court time that these guys will have. Like we've just said, like, who knows when the season's actually going to start. I think it's going to benefit those teams that have kind of been together for a little while, at least early on. And this Nets team is the opposite of that. So I can definitely see some struggles out of the gate.
Marcus, anything from the KD and JJ Redick podcast that you want to highlight?
Not a ton. I think we talked about the him talking about LeVert, and he talked about Steve Nash also, and how he just kind of wants to like soak up everything that Steve can teach him. There was the stuff about that I saw kind of going around Twitter a little bit about KD saying he was never going to the Knicks. Some people took that as like, I don't know, like him sort of like being a coward, I guess, because he didn't want to like be the king of New York or be like in the mecca of basketball, quote unquote. I don't know. I think that that stuff is kind of like a few years old at this point to talk about like in that way, sort of like speaking about a guy's like personality or anything like that, just based on like where he chooses to play basketball. I feel like that's a little bit, old school at this point to say something like that. So I don't know. That was my biggest takeaway.
I'm with you on that. It's like, he can't handle it. He doesn't want it. Like,
right.
I mean, look at where the Knicks are and look at where the Nets are. Not that the Nets are perfect, because we just kind of got some of the things that they have going on. You know, they fired their coach in kind of year one of this regime, even though, you know, KD wasn't there. So you can kind of say it's year zero almost, but you know, the Knicks have a really bad bleak situation. Like they basically have had for the last, you know, 20 years besides kind of like a small blips on the radar. So I don't think you can fault anyone for not wanting to go there, because they don't want to do a fixer-upper. You know, they want to buy a house that's like ready-made and, you know, ready to go. They don't want to tear it all down and build it back up. And, you know, who knows if there's going to be problems with the plumbing and the construction and the roof and all that. So KD didn't want to deal with that.
Yeah. And there's no right answer to that question. Like if a guy stays in one place and doesn't win, like a Damian Lillard type, that can kind of be held over him at times, like, oh, you don't have a ring, blah, blah, blah. But if you do what KD or LeBron or some of these other guys have done and you like join a team and win, that can be cheapened. So you're not going to please everyone. So I just do what makes you happy, which is what it seemed like KD has done.
Yes, exactly. Do what makes you happy. it's like you should get it tattooed on his wrist or something.
Like Sheena from Vanderpump across his forearm.
Yes, exactly. Speaking of Vanderpump, or I guess speaking of the Bravo family, I ran into Carl from Summer House today on the street.
Did you say anything or no?
Yeah, yeah. I said, more life, because that's his catchphrase on the show when he's like blackout drunk. And then I said, I loved you last season. He said, thanks, bro. Very, very tall guy. He could shooting guard size. He's probably like 6'4", 6'5".
Okay. Yeah. A couple more inches, Nets could have used him as a stretch four.
I know. And I think he's played ball on the show a little bit, you know. Decent shooter. Doesn't seem like he likes to play inside that much, but, you know, has a bit of range.
I'm glad you got to see him, Josh.
Yeah, that's my little scouting report. I wonder if Nash is going to see him in person as part of the talent evaluation stuff.
Yeah, maybe we'll see him courtside at a Nets game one day when fans are allowed again.
It's also, you know, that if he's getting shown on the Jumbotron, that there's absolutely no one. Like, if he's getting shown on the Jumbotron, me and you can be like, oh, shit. Like, in a year from now, it's going to be us.
I would love if they showed us as like Locked On Nets co-hosts and the arena's just dead silent.
Yes. Oh my God. And it's like, it says like Gavin Shaw on the Chiron instead of our names.
It says the glue guys.
Exactly.
Wait a second.
Like Nets podcasters like, oh, the glue guys are here. Like, no, Locked On guys. Like, oh, no, we don't care.
All right, yeah. Maybe like a smattering of applause to be polite.
This is a good bit, but we'll take this offline. Anything else on the news front that you want to hit? What do you think of D'Antoni getting, or not getting fired, but leaving? I think it seemed pretty conclusive that he wasn't going to be the coach next year, given basically kind of the tension that's been kind of over the team since the fall. But any thoughts on that? And is he going to get another gig given his age, or is he just someone that at this point might just say, I've had a great run, no championships obviously, but one of the most respected coaches and innovative coaches, and that's good enough for me?
I mean, it seems like he wants to keep coaching. I saw Woj tweeted that I think he has interest in the Philly job, which would be really interesting because I feel like that personnel is completely the opposite of what he had in Houston, where in Houston, no one was above like 6'7" really. And then in Philly, his point guard would be taller than that. So a completely different roster. I'd be really interested to see if he winds up in Philadelphia or if he winds up somewhere else, if he's able to kind of have another run at the back end of his career. And then in terms of the Rockets and who their new coach is going to be, I've seen rumors about Jeff Van Gundy possibly returning. Our guy, Sam Cassell, former Rocket, has been brought up for the first time. We tried to start that bandwagon to get him to the Nets. Didn't happen. We're happy with Steve Nash now, but maybe he'll get the Rockets job. Ty Lue also rumored there. That'll be really interesting to see not only who they bring in as their coach, but what they do with their roster. Because I think, they're kind of in one world right now with this really small team. Now without D'Antoni, do they want to change their style, or is the vision of this team kind of coming from Morey? I think we'll see that based on what moves are made this offseason, whether this decision to go super small was sort of like a combo of D'Antoni, Morey, more D'Antoni, more Morey. I think we'll be able to tell based on the roster moves this offseason and then how that impacts James Harden and whoever else is still on the Rockets next season in terms of playing a completely different style for the first time in a while. Maybe it helps them out. Maybe they can take some of what they did under D'Antoni and mix it with something new. I don't know. They definitely needed sort of a shaking up and sort of a change of pace because they've run into a wall the last few years, I think.
They definitely needed, something different there. And they've had a lot of turnover when you think about it, and just kind of like the key parts of the team even. Obviously when D'Antoni first got there, you have a team that is basically running up and down the court, playing really fast. I think at that point, Harden kind of didn't have the stink on him that he now does, and they were just kind of coming right off the Dwight era. But then going from like Chris Paul to Westbrook, and now kind of the trading of Capella and downsizing, it's an interesting job for sure. I mean, if Cassell gets it, to have your first team and you're coaching James Harden and Russell Westbrook, that's tough, man. That's really tough, and especially some of the constraints on the roster that they're probably going to have from, Fertitta, not wanting to spend as much and limiting what Morey can do. It's a tough job if Cassell's taking that. I think D'Antoni in Philly could be really interesting. You have to wonder about Embiid's future then. I think Simmons makes a lot of sense there, just kind of running pick and roll and spraying out to shooters. They don't have a ton of shooters, but they need to get some. They just really have, like, Korkmaz is their only guy who's knocked down, but then you have to think of how Embiid's going to fit in that system. So, I don't know. The coaching dynamics right now and the coaching carousel, I think, is going to be really, really interesting when you look at, like, the Sixers that in Ty Lue, where it's, like, seems like it's on the one-yard line half the time but hasn't gotten fully announced. And then you have interesting jobs like the Rockets and Pelicans, where those teams are at different stages but both extremely talented in their own right. Mm-hmm. So
Pacers,
Pacers, yep, as well, where McMillan might have gotten a bit of a short shrift there. Has McMillan gotten linked to any new jobs yet?
I haven't seen him linked to any, which is kind of strange to me because, I mean, we talked about it when he actually got let go, but he's done a really nice job with that team, especially given like all the injuries they've had with their top guys, whether it was Oladipo or Sabonis or Turner at times. Like, he's had to juggle a lot, and that team consistently overachieved in the regular season at least. So I would think he'll get another job somewhere if he wants one. I don't know if he maybe wants a break or something, but yeah, I haven't seen him linked to anywhere.
Yeah, he definitely deserves another job. I mean, besides Lou, in terms of tenured coaches, and take D'Antoni out of it, I guess, I think he's probably my number two and who I'd want right behind Ty.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
So that will be interesting. And I don't know if there's going to be any more jobs that open up even. I think from teams that are left, you know, I think everyone seems pretty safe. I think there might have been some rumblings about Mike Malone getting sacked if the Jazz had knocked them out in the first round and maybe like closed it out in five, like they could have. But I think right now the job he's done and getting it to a game seven against the Clippers team that's like was the favorite to win the championship, and you know, probably still will be if they can win this game seven. Mike Malone's done a nice job there to the point where we also all feel bad with him and not getting to see his wife for a while. So I think he definitely deserves kind of continued shot there.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, he was kind of on the hot seat, and I feel like before the Nets made their hire, we kind of talked about him as a guy who might be on the market if things didn't work out for Denver. But like you said, I mean, to come back from 3-1 and then to go down 3-1 again and come all the way back to tied 3-3 now as we record this, like, that's really tough. It's never been done to have a team come back from 3-1 twice in the same postseason. So we'll have to see what happens in game seven on Tuesday, I believe. But regardless, he's done a really nice job mixing in Michael Porter now, getting Gary Harris back, getting him kind of worked back in. He played 42 minutes in game six, and kind of knowing when to plug and play guys into the lineup. He's done a really nice job.
Yeah, he has. I think the last two games, like the comebacks that they've had from being on the ropes, it's been pretty impressive. And I think it also says a lot about, you know, Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray and, you know, even Paul Millsap with kind of the outbursts he had in the third quarter to basically spur them and keep them alive. They've shown a lot. And I think that they're a team, if they can round out, you know, some of their kind of mid-tier players, they can continue evolving, especially if Murray can continue his leap. But, it's such an interesting team when you have a guy like Jokic, who's such an anomaly as your top guy, but they've made it work. And I think have proved a lot of people wrong.
I picked them going into that Jazz series and I had a lot of confidence in them, and then it looked really bad, but I guess I should have held more firmly behind them because they've backed it up and they really don't quit. And that, I think, is a huge credit to their coaching.
Yep. Yep. It's a fun time to be an NBA fan, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got like a crazy unexpected series in the East with the Heat making it to the conference finals. And then whatever happens in this Clippers Nuggets game seven is going to be great, because either the Clippers will be upset and they'll continue their run of not making the conference finals, which will be insane after all that they acquired in the offseason, or we'll get the LA series that we've kind of all been looking forward to this whole year. So regardless, it'll be a great outcome. And yeah, we're really getting down to it now.
Yep. And Marcus, before we go, quick predictions on Celtics Heat. Obviously, the West Coast is not, Western Conference not locked in yet, but give me a quick prediction on what you're thinking for the Eastern Conference.
I think I'm going to say Celtics in six is where I'm at right now. I think getting over the hump against that Toronto team was really tough, and I think we kind of saw it a little bit at the end of the Bucks series, where the Heat kind of didn't play as well when I think people were kind of backing them and when they were sort of expected to play well. I think they thrive as an underdog. And I think coming into the series, most people are looking at it as pretty even. I've seen a lot of people actually picking the Heat. And I just think the Celtics have a lot of talent. They've got a lot of like wing depth And they've got a lot of shooting, which the Bucks didn't really have. And so I'm going to go Celtics in six. What are you thinking?
I'm going Heat in six. I think that, you know, the biggest weakness that the Raptors had was that Gasol was basically unplayable and just looked so slow out there.
Yeah, he was bad.
From him to Bam Adebayo, where really the only kind of big mismatch that, you know, Tatum and Kemba and, you know, a little Jaylen Brown can get is, you know, if you're Tatum, obviously you have can kind of post up and body Dragic and Hero. And most of these guys have a big quickness advantage against Duncan Robinson, even though he's no slouch. But if they're matched up on Adebayo, he's going to lock them up similar to what he did to Giannis. So I think that's going to be a huge edge. Just, you know, the makeup of the Heat team, I think, is going to be tougher to score on if you're the Celtics than you had last round against the Raptors. And I think offensively, it's going to be really tough sledding for Miami. But, you know, Jimmy Butler has proved me wrong so many times to the point where at this point, I just have kind of blind faith in him. And you have shooters that can knock down shots and are going to be part of your rotation. If Jay Crowder can, you know, keep up the stretch that he's had, I think that it can be a really fun series. But, you know, I just like the Heat at this point. I think they have a team of destiny, if you will, and just an absolute alpha in Jimmy Butler that I know is basically going to do everything he possibly can to get them into the finals.
Yeah, I think the Bam point is a good one. And yeah, I'm expecting like more defensive battles like we saw in that Celtics-Raptors series, because I think both of these teams can kind of defend the other pretty well, and it's going to be tough to score. So I think it'll come down to shot making, which is why I give the edge slightly to Boston, but I totally see your point. I think defensively, yeah, this is a much better matchup if you're going against the Celtics than Toronto was because of that weak spot at center for the Raptors.
Yep. Real rock fight. And Marcus, we're going to be watching at least some of these games in person because we're going on a little excursion next weekend.
So that'll be very excited, Josh.
Yeah, it will be good. I guess we'll kind of be in the thick of, you know, the Eastern Conference series and just kind of getting the Western Conference series underway. Of course, as I said before, subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, rate us and review us, and follow us on Twitter. I am at @JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal, Barahal. The podcast is at Locked On Nets. And I can't believe that we're doing another episode with Steve Nash as the coach of the Brooklyn Nets. It still barely feels real to me, but I love it nonetheless. So exciting things happening here in Netsland. And until next time, be well.
Bye.